Hello, everyone. Welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gib.
And we are going to begin with some good corona news, some positive COVID-19 news, which I know is rare these days because, yes, you've probably seen the headlines and heard on this show that subvariants of Omicron are spreading, and we're expecting a new wave. A new wave is underway with a peak possibly in the next 2 months. Those are the subvariants BA4, BA5, and BA2121, my least favorite, just because of the name.
2121.
Yeah.
So what's the good news?
The good news is that we are increasing our ability to kill this virus and other airborne viruses and bacteria before it even gets into our lungs in the first place. And this is through the use of something called UVC radiation. For some of you out there, you may have...
Light.
Well, not visible. Nothing on the visible spectrum.
Okay.
Just like UV rays, which we all know from, you know, you put sunscreen on.
Ultraviolet.
You're going out to the beach. Ultraviolet are beyond the ability of our eyeballs to actually see, which is why you can still get sunburned on days where you don't even feel the sun really shining. Mm. And we all know that UV rays are dangerous and we should avoid them. We should protect ourselves from them. So how can we use UVC radiation, which is actually like shorter wavelengths, higher frequencies, how can we use that in a safe way to kill the coronavirus or other viruses before it even gets to us? That was the question, because we knew already that UVC radiation, basically, it can kill viruses. We knew that. But what we didn't know is how long, you know, should you apply it or use it to kill viruses, and in what wavelength specifically? Because here the wavelength really does matter.
To do it safely
yeah. for human beings. So what they did is, these were a couple scientists, couple researchers in New York in the United States. And what they wanted to do is they checked different wavelengths of UVC radiation. It was 222 nanometers, 254 nanometers, and 265 nanometers. And the winner was 265, or basically you could say something between 260 and 280.
Was the deadliest for the virus?
No.
Okay.
It was not the deadliest for the virus, but it was the one that didn't hurt human beings badly and also killed the virus.
Perfect medium.
So, yeah, and so what was interesting about this one question I really did have is how do you test that? Because you certainly cannot pull a bunch of people into the lab and say, hey, we're going to burn you, right, with some UV light. Can't do that. Here's what they did. They got, quote unquote, full thickness 26-year-old female breast skin, which was obtained from Yale Pathology Tissue Service.
They have that just
hanging around within 24 hours of elective surgery. And they did this because breast tissue typically has lower levels of solar UV exposure. So it's good for testing what happens, you know, to skin if you throw this kind of UV radiation at it. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it was actually more effective in the 222 nanometer range and 254 nanometer range. But there what it did is it basically started cracking the human skin, which would allow other pathogens to get in. It's bad for the skin anyway. But you could get bacteria in there. You could potentially have DNA damage. Nobody wants any of that. So the result they now know is that this range, 260 to 280, you can use inside of a room where people are moving about.
Does it get inside the body? Because I'm assuming that to stop transmission, you'd have to...
Radiation.
You'd have to... It would kill the virus inside the human body?
No. As I understand it, it would be annihilating virus that exists in the aerosols, or those floating droplets that have the virus in them. As far as I understand it, that's what would be destroyed through the use of UVC. So that is some good news. In the future, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but as the authors themselves say at the very end, this system we came up with can become the model for anybody who wants to standardize the dosage. This is how to determine the eradication of SARS-CoV-2 using UVC, but maybe also SARS-CoV-3, SARS-CoV-4, SARS-CoV-5, etc. We hope we never get there, but we need to be prepared. So this is for the future. This is a good development.
Well, thank you for the good news, Connor. The news I have isn't that great. The United States, there are 1 million people have now died there from COVID-19, at least. From what we know, the actual number is probably way higher. And just before I get to the news, just imagine that, the number 1 million. Bear with me for a second. NPR put this together. It's great. If you wrote your name on a page 250 times, the book would be 2,000 pages long. That's how many people that is. Your name 250 times on a piece of paper, 2,000-page book.
See, I don't know why that doesn't do it for me as much as a stadium. If you've been to a sporting event with 50,000 people...
How about this? The pandemic's been going on 2 years. One person every minute?
That's, yeah.
Walk outside. Take, you know, walk out the door. Don't stop walking for 7 days. The number of strides, that's a million.
That's a million steps.
The Titanic, you know, that's still in our minds. Imagine that happened 667 times. That 1 million mark, that's just the deaths from COVID-19. What about the deaths that happened as a result of the pandemic, the lockdowns, and the number of alcohol-related deaths in the United States has gone up or went up in 2020 drastically compared to the 10 years prior to the pandemic, alcohol-related deaths. It went up by 25%.
Oof.
So in 2020, there were 99,000 alcohol-related deaths. And in the 10 years prior to that, each year, an average of 78,000 deaths. So that's just a huge jump.
This connects back to an interview we did, what, probably a year ago now.
Rose Marie Ward?
Yeah.
Miami University of Ohio.
Exactly. Not in Miami, but in Ohio.
Miami University. And we laughed about that.
She and her team... established the same thing by analyzing Twitter for the term blackout drunk or similar terms and found that it had spiked.
Exactly. Anything relating to alcohol-induced alcohol amnesia, I believe is what she called it, getting blacked out drunk, just went off the charts, starting with the pandemic. And she was already back then talking about being afraid of the use of alcohol or the use of language referring to these blackout events being normalized. That was what she was afraid of. And according to this, because in 2020, it went up by 25%. And then what happened next year? Same thing. So it went up 22% compared to the 10 years before the pandemic.
Reestablish the baseline.
Right? So this is the new normal.
And that
the number of alcohol-related deaths. So that's overdose. That's accidents happening as a result of alcohol. That's liver disease.
Although, to be fair, it has gone up and stayed there during times where there still were lockdowns and where the conditions of a pandemic were still in place. The hope
Stress,
would be,
right?
Yeah, the hope would be that with society gradually, you know, returning to an endemic phase or pretending that the virus has gone away. Okay, last thing I will try to pack in here real quickly. study I couldn't resist, cats. I tend to be a dog guy myself.
I don't like cats, but yeah, continue.
So a lot of people do. And in Japan, which is where the study is from, you not only have, just like everywhere else, households with multiple cats, you have these cat cafes, which are like, in you know, the cats come in, go about their daily business. You go into the cafe, drink a cup of tea, and you can pet the cats. And that's a thing you can do there. So what some researchers from Japan decided to try to figure out is, in this study, is do cats, they know their name. Do they know the names of other cats? And it's a...
They do?
And they do. Yeah, they definitely appear to do. They confirmed their suspicions. And what interested me most was not the conclusion, but the way you test that. How do you test that? And what they did is they had two groups. They had these cafe cats, and then they had cats that were living at home, in people's homes. And one condition was that if they're living at home, they have to have a couple other cats there. And let's just say, for the sake of the argument, I'm the cat being tested, and I live with two other cats. There's Mary and there's Greg, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what they did is they put a picture of one of those two cats that I live with up on the screen, and then sometimes it would say Mary, mm-hmm. and it'd show a picture of Mary the cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it would show the picture of Greg, and it'd be like, Mary,
yeah.
Right? Saying the wrong name.
And how did the cat
react to that? And this messed with the cat's heads. They stared at the picture of the incongruous situation where the wrong name was applied longer than they did when it was the correct name.
Now we know that they're not as indifferent as they're... Isn't that the cliche that cats just don't care?
That they would...
They care enough about other cats' names?
Yeah, I think even
or
more
have that
more than
cognitive ability.
Indifferent that it's a situation of dependency and mutual loathing in some ways that they're if they were bigger, if they like where the cat looks at you, I would take you down if I could. Thank mm-hmm. you for the food. Thanks for petting me.
But that's it.
But look at me the wrong way, and I'll go for the jugular. So it's yeah, or at least that's a cliche I've heard quite a bit. All the cat lovers out there probably hate me.
Mm-hmm.
But we know at the very least that they can recognize other names now. And that's kind of cool science from Germany.
Thank you, Connor.
And that's kind of cool science from Japan.
Thank you, Connor, for that little bit.
Absolutely welcome, Gabriel Borden.
We're done.
Yeah.
We're done. I gotta go.
If you have anything to say on anything that we've talked about today, get in touch with us. We're su@dw.com.
Science Unscripted.